A couple of weeks ago, came across a news article about Johnson & Johnson baby powder containing asbestos, with the company long knowing about it, and I posted on the Issues and Ideas Facebook page. I was really surprised by the reaction it received, large number of shares, and I was also concerned by the large number of people commenting they never knew about this situation, which I also didn't, by the way. This has obviously become a major legal issue for J&J, which my next guest is here to discuss. She's litigation counsel with the law firm of Franklin D. Azar and Associates, Kelly Hyman. Thanks for being here today, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Franklin D. Azar's website, FDAZAR.com, learn more about their legal services and Kelly's work. And by the way, Kelly, you also have some past experience dealing with Johnson & Johnson, if I've been told correctly.
Yes, absolutely. I worked on transvaginal mesh that women had implanted for prolapse or stress urinary incontinence, and one of the manufacturers of the mesh is Johnson & Johnson. So I've litigated against them.
So just for the listener who is probably not one of those who are not knowing of the situation, give us some background, because the root of it, I understand, is that where talc is mined, there also exists an above-average amount of asbestos or asbestos-related fiber in those natural mining locations. And that seems to be the root of this whole issue.
No, that's a very, very good point. Mark Lanier, who's a well-respected plaintiff's attorney, who tried a case that the verdict was a $4.69 billion verdict. And he argued that the asbestos found in the product led to women developing ovarian cancer.
And those are the health risks of being alleged. And I think at last count, almost 12,000 now lawsuits are pending against Johnson & Johnson.
Absolutely. There are numerous in state and federal court. They're all over the U.S. that are being brought by women that allege that the talc that they use for feminine hygiene has caused them ovarian cancer.
These are all individual suits. Do we know why this has not become a class action suit?
Usually on class action lawsuits, you look at it's more everyone kind of has the same injuries. And so when you have individual lawsuits, you're looking at everyone's own individual injuries and harm. There is a multi-district litigation, and that's where federal cases that are filed go to one particular judge to oversee the litigation, and so that each person will have their day in court and case will be tried because the different issues related to them and different damages that they've incurred.
Are these in hindsight, maybe individual cases are a benefit for the litigants, because you have more lawyers asking for more information, which, like it or not, J&J has finally been forced to reveal. That was part of the basis of the story that Reuters came out with a couple of weeks ago, their study of almost 12,000 documents, thousands of documents, nevertheless. Maybe with more lawyers knocking on the door, that's probably a better way to get more information out to the public for it to be used in court for all these cases.
No, absolutely. That's an excellent point. And plaintiffs argue in that Johnson & Johnson, knew the fact that of the harm that it occurred, that they knew that. And that's one of the arguments that plaintiffs assert in these cases.
And the at least from what they've been able to discern so far, J&J's first knowledge of asbestos or asbestos-related elements among the talc that they were using to process to create the baby powder goes back to as far back as 1957, 1958.
Right. Plaintiffs assert that there's that Johnson & Johnson has known about this for many years. Now, Johnson & Johnson takes a different position, of course, on it. But yes, that's plaintiffs that they knew about this many years ago.
What are specifically the laws that are being violated? The obvious is personal endangerment, but are all these cases, at least the best that you can discern, using the same laws as their foundation, or are they going after Johnson & Johnson in a variety of paths?
Right. Each state, will have its own laws in regards to certain things, but there's some, you know, I would say claims such as the failure to warn claim. It's where you bring when a product comes on the market, you're saying that they knew of this danger, but they failed to warn you. So they failed to give you some kind of information or some kind of disclaimer that you were going to end up with some kind of harm in the future. You see this a lot in drug cases where plaintiffs will assert that, you know, you knew that this drug is going to cause you cancer, but yet you didn't warn the public. You failed to warn, you failed to notify them or let them know that they're going to have this harm. And that's one of the things that, you know, the plaintiffs are arguing, that you knew about this, yet you decided not to let the people know. And it's important for the people to know so they can make an informed decision about what they're going to do and how it's going to affect them. If you don't know how something's going to affect you, then you can't really do anything about it.
Much like with the tobacco companies and the warnings on the sides of packages of cigarettes and cigars, for example.
Yes, absolutely. And I worked on tobacco cases in Florida as well.
With the amount of product that goes out with something like a Johnson & Johnson baby powder, we're talking with Attorney Kelly Hyman from Franklin D. Azar & Associates. FDAzar.com is the website, listening to Issues and Ideas. With the amount of product that has been used over the existence of this product, and again, nearly 12,000 lawsuits so far at least, does the company have a legitimate claim by saying, well, if you weigh out the number of people using versus the number of people allegedly injured by the product, you can't really put the weight on the company?
You know, that's a, you know, very interesting point. And you know, that's, I guess, an internal, you know, decision that, you know, they, you know, decide to make, you know, that is their, you know, their choice to do. But I think, you know, it's important that the people, the public are aware of, you know, what's going on. And I really appreciate you shedding this to light, because it's really important, especially for women. You know, a lot of women have used you know, talc for feminine hygiene for, you know, years. Their mothers used it. Their grandmothers used it. And it's important for women to be aware that, you know, a lot of women don't know. I had, you know, no idea that, you know, I do this, that I could get ovarian cancer. And it's a very, you know, serious illness.
Well, I bring that up, too, because the company chair and CEO, Alex Gorsky, has been making the rounds on a company video. He was on CNBC, I think, on Mad Money, which was one of the most watched shows, basically saying there is no asbestos. I mean, he was absolute in the statement. There is no asbestos in Johnson & Johnson baby powder, but that's sort of skirting the issue because, okay, you can find it, refine the product in the here and now. That does not erase things that happened in the past. For example, with the FDA, the 1976, this was something that Rogers found, was weighing limits on asbestos in talc powder, and J&J assured FDA no asbestos was detected in any sample of talc that was produced between back then, December of 72, October 73. They did not tell the agency, according to some of the documents that came out, at least three tests by three different labs between 72 and 75 had found asbestos in the talc. One case, or the report, called that amount rather high. So for the CEO to come out to speak as an absolute, yet counter it with some of their own documents saying, well, not so fast there, that sort of puts the company on, rather than a foundation, more like a sand pile.
That's a very interesting point.
Moving forward, what would you say as an attorney looking at a situation like this overall for the plaintiffs? What's the best path for someone to take when something like this is learned about and they look at their personal health history and say, okay, wait a minute now. This could be from that, and it could have impacted me.
No, absolutely. You know, to your health is the number one important thing. To, you know, talk to your doctor and find out about it. But you know, there comes a point in time to, you know, speak, you know, to an attorney about it and see what your options are. But as I said before, your health is, you know, is the most important thing, and it's important that, you know, people are aware and see, you know, to talk to their doctor about it, what they can do if they're in that situation.
And it's kind of surprising how Johnson & Johnson seems to be standing firm on the authenticity of their claims with their baby powder, because if you think back to the Tylenol scare, that was a large amount of J&J's revenue, and they pulled everything off the shelf very quickly. To their credit, by the way, I'll be devil's advocate here, but the baby powder is a minute part of the company's revenue, and they seem to be digging in the heels on this.
You know, that's the internal decision, you know, what they, you know, decide, you know, to do. So, you know, there are a lot of products out there that, you know, help people and benefit people. But it's important to shed light on stuff that is, you know, plaintiff's attorney is, you know, believe is harm people. Cause we want to help people and make a difference for them. Especially women.
I just found my note too. The company has had $76 billion last year in revenue. The talc powder makes up 0.5% of the company's revenue, but this they decide to dig their heels on. But again, information empowers those who are unintended or intended victims, and through the stubbornness and ignorance of a company, it's the best fuel for which to fight back with. So do a Google search of Johnson & Johnson baby powder and asbestos. See what you come up with, because just maybe if you have some health concerns in your past, in your recent past, or someone in your family, you might have just found the answer to that curious concern that came about through what you thought was no viable reason. Learn more about the work of the law firm Franklin D'Azar and Associates. Their website is fdazar.com. We've been joined by one of their litigation council members, Kelly Hami. Kelly, thanks for the work you're doing in helping people understand the situation better, the resources and the recourses they have to take. Thanks for being here today.
No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can help some people in the future that have been harmed. Appreciate it.